And now, Stein Online presents Mark Stein's Song of the Week.
Hey, welcome along. And today we're in a hail to the chiefy kind of mood.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to have you know what this show is all about. With the title, Mr. President, you've wondered, no doubt, just who it could be. Don't jump to conclusions. It's not who you think. Not the Roosevelts. Not the Trumans. Not the Eisenhowers. No, this is not that kind of show. Not the Kennedys. No, not the Kennedys.
No, not Roosevelt, not Truman, not Eisenhower, not Kennedy, but all of them and 41 presidents more besides. Happy President's Day in the United States, or to use the official title, Happy Federal Observance of Washington's Birthday Day. And yes, I know we're really celebrating Washington's birthday and Lincoln's birthday, and there's no point pretending that Franklin Pierce and Chester Arthur are on a par with those two guys, but don't blame me, it was the United States government that came up with this cockamamie thing called President's Day, and that is our theme for this holiday. I thought it would be fun to see if we could produce a musical cavalcade featuring all 45 American presidents. So that's what we're going to do. And it's the widest range of music we've ever featured on our Song of the Week, because we've got show tunes, we've got folk songs, we've got rap sung by a diverse collection of performers, from Bing Crosby to James Brown, Sophie Tucker to Sheryl Crow, Groucho Marx to Jay-Z. So here they come, 45 songs for 45 presidents.
Land of Washington and Lincoln, Henry Ford and Morris Guest. Land of Franklin, land of Coolidge, men who stood the test. Land of Jefferson and Adams, Dempsey and Ben Turpin too. Andrew Jackson, Woodrow Wilson, all red, white and blue.
Yes, we're in a lyrical land of Washington and Lincoln, Coolidge, Jefferson, Adams, Jackson, Wilson, et al. No, wait, Al never made it. He won the Nobel Peace Prize instead. But that's our theme for this holiday. We don't really have any hard and fast rules about this, except I decided to exclude presidential campaign songs specifically written to hymn the virtues of their guy, Teddy Come Back, Wilson That's All, Nixon's the One, etc. In part because they all blur together, Teddy That's All, Wilson's the One, Nixon Come Back. And also because that feels more of a Novemberish kind of thing than something for February. But other than that, geez, these just happen to be some presidentially minded songs that tickle my fancy. That introductory number, by the way, comes from a patriotic rally held during the first act of George and Ira Gershwin's 1927 show, Strike Up the Band. They were hailing fine, upstanding Americans in general. Ben Turpin was the cross-eyed silent film star, Jack Dempsey the boxer, Morris Guest the producer of the 1919 Broadway hit Morris Guest's Midnight Whirl, with music by one George Gershwin. But it's still a good opening number for us, because in among the more general celebrities, Ira Gershwin name-checks a septet of presidents, including the then-incumbent Calvin Coolidge. I can't think of any better way to start than with a song for one of our two birthday boys by that most unabashed of flag wavers, George M. Cohan. He wrote this in 1906 for George Washington Jr., the show that also produced one of our very first Song of the Week songs, You're a Grand Old Flag. And if you'd been at the Herald Square Theatre in New York 104 years ago, you could have seen George M. as General Belgrave, the son of Senator Belgrave, an Anglophile snob who wants his boy to marry the daughter of Lord Rothbart rather than an all-American girl like Dolly Johnson. The show's set mostly at Mount Vernon, where the Belgraves are showing the Rothbart some American history, and in the course of all the plot shenanigans, George Belgrave changes his name to George Washington Jr. and starts to muse musically.
If Washington Should Come to Life, sung by Billy Murray, Edison Records.
This version isn't by George M. himself, but is sung by one of the first recording stars of the American music business, Billy Murray, 102 years ago.
If Washington should come to life and see her mother stand, a smile from Georgie's lips would surely fall. Instead of all the wasted fields and plains and barren lands, he'd find the greatest country of them all. He'd find he's not neglected, that his memory rends the air. His monuments erected, he would see most everywhere. He'd find a mighty nation of men who do and dare. He'd find he's still the daddy of them all. He'd marvel at the changes as he'd take a look around. At motor cars he'd surely stop and stare. I wonder what he'd think of all these railroads underground and elevated trains up in the air. The kinetoscope would faze him when he'd see the pictures walk. The phonograph would daze him when the thing began to talk. The crush and shove amaze him if he ever saw New York with its wondrous big skyscrapers all around.
Not sure he'd feel quite so buoyant if he should come to life another century on, particularly if he showed up the day the Senate passed the health care bill. But the song does wonder whether President Washington would find it politic to be discreet about his then successor.
I wonder how he takes to Teddy Roosevelt. I'd like to hear exactly what he'd say. I wonder if he'd try to never tell a lie if Washington should come to life today.
Indeed. Over half a century later, George and Teddy were reunited in another lyric from Irving Berlin's final Broadway show, Mr. President. In this case, the song offers the useful advice that every commander-in-chief should have a hobby.
You need a hobby.
What hobby?
Observing cuties in a hotel lobby.
Teddy Roosevelt collected heads.
George Washington just slept in beds. Go in for dancing.
Teddy Roosevelt collected heads. George Washington just slept in beds. Well, I knew we'd get to that somewhere along the way. Aside from the citation in our opening pantheon, John Adams has proved less mellifluous to the lyric muse, but he did emerge as the somewhat stiff hero of the 1960s Broadway hit 1776. And as far as I know, this exchange is the only duet between two presidents, not to mention the only one between two fellas who died on the same day, the 4th of July, 1826, exactly half a century after the Declaration of Independence. Given that burden of history, Sherman Edwards nevertheless manages to make them sound like a wooden vaudevillian crosstalk act, a Pennsylvania Avenue version of Mr. Gallagher and Mr. Sheen.
Mr. Jefferson, dear Mr. Jefferson, I'm only 41, I still have my virility. And I can romp through Cupid's Grove with great agility. But life is more than sexual combustibility.
Bustability, bustability, combustibility.
Quiet! Now you write it, Mr. J.
Who will make me, Mr. A? I.
You.
Yes.
How?
By physical force, if necessary. It's your duty. It's your duty, damn it.
Mr. Adams. Damn you, Mr. Adams. You're obnoxious and dislike that cannot be denied. Once again you stand between me and my lovely bride.
Lovely bride.
Oh, Mr. Adams, you are driving me to homicide.
Homicide, homicide, we may.
But maybe the third president deserves an entry all of his own. So here's a song called, straightforwardly enough, Thomas Jefferson, 1743 to 1826. It was written by Timothy Sellers and Peter Kelly for a CD by Artichoke called Scientists, called 26 Scientists, Volume 1, Anning to Malthus. And despite the title of the song, Thomas Jefferson, 1743 to 1826, is really more preoccupied with Whitney and his cotton gin, to quote an Ira Gershwin lyric. And it deals with Jefferson's tenure as Secretary of State, an office that, back in those pre-humongous, gargantuan, enormously big government days, was also responsible for issuing patents. Which is more or less historically accurate. Whitney got his patent in 1794, but never made much money out of the cotton gin, and got bogged down in lawsuits. But he cleaned up with a big turn-of-the-century War Department contract for muskets with interchangeable parts. Speaking of which, let's get up to Madison and the War of 1812. And this is a song by a group called Fifth Year Crush. And if I get the idea of this right, it's really addressed to a girl called Madison. But the swain who is smitten by this girl called Madison frames his feelings for her with various allusions to Madison, and James Madison, that is, and the War of 1812. At least I think I'm on top of it there.
Dear Madison, I hope you that I'd start a war to free your smile, that I'd gladly stand and demand of a thousand red coats. Give me freedom and take my life. So come with me and we'll be free. Lord,
and from Madison to Monroe, which is almost a reprise, but not exactly. Our opening, as I mentioned, came from a Gershwin show of 1927 called Strike Up the Band. It flopped, so 3 years later, in 1930, they extensively revised it. George rewrote the music, a lot of the music, but Ira kept the lyric for that song as is, except for one word. He removed the hitherto incumbent president, Coolidge, who by then had left the White House, and rummaged around for a bisyllabic replacement. Now, this version has never been recorded, so I'm going to use the old 1927 version and insert the bisyllabic 1930 replacement myself. See if you can spot it.
Land of Washington and Lincoln, Henry Ford and Morris Guest. Land of Franklin, land of
Monroe.
Men who stood the test.
Well, evidently Coolidge didn't stand the test as far as Ira Gershwin was concerned. We'll get a second opinion on that a little later. On to Adam's Feast in 1996 on the album Poem Foam, New Word Order. Foamola offered this.
In 1822, he learned to waltz. He got dizzy and needed smelling salts.
Hey, John Quincy Adams, John Quincy Adams, John Quincy Adams, he's my friend. John Quincy Adams, John Quincy Adams, John Quincy Adams, here he comes again.
Well, he certainly liked to dance, so that's true enough. The seventh president, Andrew Jackson, turns up in the strangest places. Harold Arlen and Yip Harburg wrote all the songs for The Wizard of Oz, including If I Only Had a Brain, With the Thoughts I'd Be Thinking, I Could Be Another Lincoln. You may remember that couplet. But they also provided Groucho Marx with a real showstopper, an ode to the well-tattooed Lady Lydia, that encyclopedia, a gal from whom you can learn an awful lot if you get to see it.
She can give you a view of the world in tattoo if you'll step up and tell her where. For a dime you can see Kankakee or Paris or Washington crossing the Delaware.
La la la, la la la, la la la, la la la.
Oh, Lydia, poor Lydia, say, have you met Lydia? Lydia, the tattooed lady. When her muscles start relaxing, up the hill comes Andrew Jackson. Lydia,
that's quite a trick. Lydia, Jackson's Veep, Martin Van Buren, succeeded him in 1837. A couple of lads from my town in New Hampshire were part of a touring band that played for America's eighth president in his retirement at Kinderhook, New York. But I don't think that really counts for our medley. Van Buren isn't one of the most famous presidents, but he turns up in a very famous song in the original lyric to Jump Jim Crow. T.D. Rice wrote the number and performed it in blackface, and it quickly became shorthand for the comic Negro stage stereotype, and then for black people on or off stage, and eventually for the Southern segregation laws that were to outlast the song by the best part of a century. Yet, if you go back to that original lyric, you'll find that T.D. Rice mentions Van Buren in it. Now, Van Buren got mentioned in an awful lot of songs because he was really the first sustained subject of musical attack ads. For example...
Who never did a noble deed? Who of the people took no heed? Who is the worst of tyrants' breed? Van Buren. Who rules us with an iron rod? Who moves at Satan's beck and nod? Who heeds not man? Who heeds not God? Van Buren. Who would his friends, his country sell? Do other deeds too base to tell? Deserves the lowest place in hell? Van Buren.
That's the sound of American political attack ads, 1836 style, for the eighth president, Martin Van Buren. The ninth is the shortest serving, having caught a fatal chill during his inaugural address, and it's hard to improve on this number on lesser-known presidents from the TV show The Simpsons. I believe this is by Frank Mueller.
We are the younger presidents. We won't buy our faces on dollars or on cents. There's Taylor, there's Tyler, there's Gilmore, and there's Hayes. There's William Henry Harrison.
I died in 30 days.
Well, if Harrison's presidency is distinguished only by its freakishly premature end, his presidential campaign proved more influential. I said at the beginning we weren't going to have any campaign songs because we usually save those till November, but I'll make an exception for this one because it was a phenomenon, a number that swept the country and remains to this day the rock around the clock of campaign songs, according to John Flansburgh of They Might Be Giants, who recorded it back in 2004. In the famous Log Cabin campaign of 1840, Harrison became the first politician to be sung into the presidency. A Democratic Party journalist sneered that the Whig candidate was content to sit in his log cabin and swig hard cider all day, gave Harrison's campaign an instant character, and so there were endless songs contrasting the cider-swigging Harrison with the effete Van Buren. Quote, let Van from his coolers of silver drink wine and lounge on his cushioned settee, unquote, which is positively John Kerry-esque. But the most popular song of all was written by a jeweler from Zanesville, Ohio, Alexander Kaufman Ross. It only mentions Harrison by his nickname, but it remains the biggest song to name-check the 10th president of the United States and Harrison's then-running mate, John Tyler.
Let them talk about hard cider, 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 and log cabins, too. It will only help to speed the ball for Tippecanoe and Tyler, too. Tippecanoe and Tyler, too. And with them will be little Van, Van, Van is a used-up man. And with them will be little Van.
And they did. And speaking of They Might Be Giants... who recorded that song in 2004, here's James K. Polk, their serenade to the eponymous 11th president.
In 4 short years he met his every goal. He seized the whole southwest from Mexico. Made sure the tariffs fell and made the English sell the Oregon Territory. He built an independent treasury. Having done all this, he sought no second term. But precious few have mourned the passing of Mr. James K. Polk, our 11th president. Young Hickory Napoleon of the Stones.
Quite. Rather more cryptic is a band called Genocide Approach and their ode to Polk's successor. Quote, yes, I know Zachary Taylor was a great war hero and all, but that doesn't mean for a second he can cut my hair, unquote. And that's just the title. I don't know what it is about Zachary Taylor, but he seems to attract exotic song titles. This one is called, quote, Zachary Taylor as Told by His Horse.
I know you remember it wasn't long ago when we rode together in the Mexican-American War. We took on Santa Ana and his 20,000 men. You sat upon me proudly with bullets racing round your head.
That's the academic challenge team. With Zachary Taylor as Told by His Horse. And if you think Zachary Taylor as Told by His Horse is an exotic concept, how about Millard Fillmore as Told by a Japanese theater troupe in Japanese performance style? The 13th president came up with a name not just for a policy, but for a musical. In 1853, Millard Fillmore sent Commodore Perry to initiate Pacific overtures to Japan. And a century and a quarter later, Pacific Overtures became the title for Stephen Sondheim's musical on the subject. Here's the American admiral bearing gifts to the Japanese emperor. And as the musical's concept has it, it's told by a Japanese theater performer speaking a kind of Nipponized version of American English, if you can follow.
Hello, America back. Commodore Perry send hello. Also comes memorial plaque. President Fillmore wish bestow. Emperor read our letter if no. Commodore Perry very sad. Emperor like our letter if so. Commodore Perry very merry. President Fillmore still more glad.
Well, a little of that goes a long way. Strangely enough, there is a song about New Hampshire's only president, the pro-slavery Northern Democrat Franklin Pierce. The folk singer Christine Lavin once sent a very nice note my way about a piece I'd written about Irvin Drake and his great song for Sinatra, It Was a Very Good Year. And this song is written by Miss Lavin with Gene Weingarten, who's a writer for the Washington Post, and, amazingly, Irvin Drake. I don't really know who did what on this song. Perhaps it's mostly by Miss Lavin and Mr. Weingarten, and Irvin Drake sort of cleaned it up a bit or just contributed it, or maybe he was in there pitching all the way. I really have no idea. But at any rate, the man who wrote When I Was 17, It Was a Very Good Year, and who wrote I Believe, and he wrote Good Morning Heartache, and Tico Tico and Quando Quando Quando, also wrote a song about Franklin Pierce called Attractive Stupid People.
Franklin Pierce was born in New Hampshire in 1804, 57 years before the start of our Civil War. Behind his back they called him Doughface, a nickname for a northern man who had southern leanings. Slavery, he was a fan. He became our 14th president in 1852. He had no real credentials, but his looks sure pulled him through. He's considered the most handsome man who's ever held the job. He was the first, but not the last, Democratic presidential heartthrob.
Well, I part company with the song when Christine Lavin starts to apply the thesis to more recent occupants of the White House. But still, I doubt even Pierce's family would have expected folks to be writing songs about him a century and a half later. So what happened next? Well, here's how the Animaniacs sum it up in their song set to the tune of the William Tell Overture.
Follows next a period spanning 4 long years with James Buchanan. Then the South start shooting cannon, and we got a civil war.
A war that's out of Dixie.
Yeah. Whoever thought the 15th president would be our first triple rhyme? But a period spanning 4 years with James Buchanan until the South starts shooting cannon. And then Buchanan was followed by the other president whose birthday we observe each February, Abraham Lincoln. In 1939, Irving Berlin conceived of a prototype concept musical, a show built around American holidays. There'd be a song for New Year, St. Patrick's Day, Easter, 4th of July, all the way up to December 25th, and a little song he had in mind about white Christmases. But Berlin also had an idea for Lincoln's birthday, and as his notes put it, quote, a number done by a coloured choir or an Ethel Waters, some angle on Emancipation Day, not too heavy, but a sincere emancipation number, a tentative title, Father Abraham, unquote. Well, projects evolve. And instead of being a Broadway show, the idea wound up as a Paramount movie, Holiday Inn, 1942. And instead of Ethel Waters, there was Bing Crosby in a very rare blackface appearance, which even then didn't seem like such a smart move if you wanted to put over a new song.
Upon a February morn, a tiny baby boy was born, Abraham, Abraham. He grew up this tiny babe, folks all called him Honest Abe, Abraham, Abraham. In 1860 he became the 16th president, and now he's in the Hall of Fame, a most respected gent. That's why we celebrate this blessed February day, Abraham, Abraham.
And the number never really recovered from that eccentric introduction. It is, though, as Irving Berlin put it, sincere.
When black folks lived in slavery, who was it set the donkey free?
Who dat?
Abraham.
Oh, honest Abraham.
Abraham. When trouble came down from the shelf, whose heart was bigger than
that's
himself.
That's what it was.
Abraham.
The country's going to the dogs, they shouted loud and long. Then from a cabin made out of logs, the right man come along.
And that is why we celebrate this blessed February date.
Abraham,
Abraham, Abraham.
Lincoln's vice president, Andrew Johnson, is best known to our generation as the impeachment trial run for Bill Clinton. But at the time, he had an astonishing number of hostile songs written about him.
Just before the battle, mother, I am thinking most of you.
Just before the battle, mother, a big song from the Civil War era. Here's what Andrew Johnson's enemies did to it. This isn't a campaign song. This is a song really warning the guy not even to think about campaigning or running for election.
Just before election, Andy, we are thinking most of you. While we get our ballots handy, just be sure they're not for you.
Just before election, Andy, we turn to less contentious matters for the 18th president, Ulysses S. Grant.
When U.S. Grant paid a visit to my hometown, they spruced it up with the lick of paint, and then they showed him round. Two bands played in fierce competition as the rain came down. And the general said, what a mighty long bridge to such a mighty little old town.
That's a song by Cole Cannon with a rather interesting angle. All that said, the single best-known line about Ulysses S. Grant predates his presidency, and it does make an appearance in that Irving Berlin song we heard a couple of presidents back.
Someone told him General Grant was drinking every night. He answered,
"Go see if you can't get all my generals tight."
Right.
That's
indeed. On to the 19th president, Rutherford B. Hayes, who has the distinction of being the first president ever to visit California.
He was a Union general, president till 1881. He was married to Lucy Webb, who had a heart as golden as the sunlight on the curtain lace. Revolution rings still in the steel. Reconstruction comes. War is done. The wounds begin to heal. Rutherford Hayes in the morning is sailing into San Francisco. It's the first time a president has ever come to California.
That's Darryl Purpose with a song about Rutherford B. Hayes. Or is it Rutherford B. Hayes?
Rudy! Rudy Hayes!
Great Plains with a song about, as they insist, Rutherford B. Hayes, which might be unduly complicating the name. That's the trouble, actually, with songs about presidents. They're not obviously the most musical in many respects. For example, James Garfield isn't so easy to rhyme. And as far as I know, only one man has ever done it. Ira Gershwin managed to work him into a song called If I Became the President. This is also of note because I believe this song is one of the very earliest American songs, 1930, to use the word sexy and to use it in a presidential context, because Ira Gershwin rhymes the word presidentially. He rhymes sexy with prexy. Listen.
You mustn't chase around when you're the prexy.
It's not my fault if women think I'm sexy. If I became the president
and I were the president's wife, you'd flood the Senate with your oratory.
I'd make each politician prohibition.
100 million drinkers would be free.
I'd grow a beard, I'm thinking.
You'd be as great as Lincoln, and Mr. Hearst would surely print your life.
But I'd never go so far afield as Tyler Polk or Garfield if I became the president.
And I were the president's wife.
James Garfield didn't go so far afield himself, spending half of his short presidency dying from the combination of an assassin's bullet and incompetent medical care. The 21st president, Chester A. Arthur, was born in Vermont, although rumours persist it was actually on the Quebec side of the border. It was kind of the Bertha movement of the day. He may actually have made the greatest musical contribution of any president, because if you know the great blues singer Howlin' Wolf, who had a tremendous impact on the Rolling Stones and a whole generation, really, of British pop performers. Howlin' Wolf was actually born Chester Arthur Burnett. His parents named him after the 21st president. I don't know why. I mean, Howlin' Wolf was born in 1910, so it was the best part of a generation after Chester Arthur's presidency, but nevertheless, they thought to name their kid after the 21st president, Chester Arthur Burnett. He wrote Little Red Rooster that the Rolling Stones had a big hit with. And he also wrote this song, which we'll dedicate to Chester Arthur, Backdoor Man, because he only got into the Oval Office because James Garfield was assassinated. So in a way, he kind of snuck in through the back door. But if you don't buy that, he's also of note, Chester Arthur, for being the first president to have a valet in the White House. And without doubt, the valet had to enter via the back door. So here is Howlin' Wolf and Backdoor Man.
I'm a backdoor man. I'm a backdoor man. Well, the men don't know, but the little girls understand. When everybody's trying to sleep, I'm somewhere making my midnight creep. Every morning when the rooster crows, tell me I got to go. I am backdoor man. I am
Howlin' Wolf, born Chester Arthur Burnett. Let's move on from the 21st president to the 22nd, Grover Cleveland, and a real bona fide standard from Rodgers and Hart.
For there's a small hotel with a wishing well. I wish that we were there together. There's a bridal suite, one room bright and neat, complete.
Great song, but what's it got to do with presidents? Well, just this, from the interlude after the first chorus, when Larry Hart starts describing this small hotel's particular charms.
Pretty window curtains made of chintz in our make-believe land.
On the wall are several cheerful prints of Grant and Grover Cleveland.
Go down into the parlor and feast your eyes on the moose head on the wall.
Perhaps you'd like to play the organ. They tune it every other fall.
The garden will be like Adam and Eve land.
No, they never did go in for carriage trade. They get what is known as marriage trade. Oh, when the steeple bell says good night, sleep well. We'll thank the small hotel. We'll creep into our little shell, and we will thank the small hotel.
On the wall are several cheerful prints of Grant and Grover Cleveland, the 18th and 22nd presidents yoked together in song. Even in the mid-1930s, did any hotel, even the smallest hotel, even the quaintest bed and breakfast, really have prints of Grover Cleveland? Well, who cares? In an ideal world, every president would enjoy that level of rhyme. You almost wish Rodgers and Hart had done the lot. By the pretty curtains made of chintz, you'll look so alluring. On the wall are several cheerful prints of Munro and Van Buren. Or, by the pretty curtains made of chintz, you will make me thrill more. On the wall are several cheerful prints of Polk and Millard Fillmore. Hey-ho! That's how things stand for the first half of our 45 President Medley. We'll pause at the almost halfway mark with Grover Cleveland in our musical Make-Believe-land.
and pick it up with the 23rd president. Coming up in the second half, Sophie Tucker, Vic Chesnut, Cole Porter, Fred Waring's Pennsylvanians, Judy Garland, Jimmy Cagney, Elvis Costello, Lou Reed, James Brown, Doris Day, Sheryl Crow, and Ronald Reagan sings. And, of course, Donald J. Trump. That's coming up in part two of our presidential medley. Happy President's Day.
Mark Stein's Song of the Week is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises. All rights reserved.